time to talk Red Sox as we get on board the G&M Family Market phone line and say hello to Tim Britton of the Providence Journal. Tim, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, guys. What's going on?
I don't know. It's starting to feel like the Mayor's Cup. Can they get rid of the Twins? I'm tired of them.
Are you saying you haven't enjoyed the action the last three nights? A little bit? Yeah, we see the Twins so much in spring training that you just get to know them so well that it does take you back to the final week of March. Whenever they come to Fenway Park for a little bit.
Yeah, I think it's those 18 meetings in Florida that wear me out on this team. And they're an interesting group. Last night, Twins finally got a win. And in the process, as you wrote about, Rick Porcello made some history that he's probably not happy about.
Yeah, I mean, when Porcello has 10 losses this year, that's a lot of losses for a pitcher this early in the season. Leads the league. And I was wondering when the last time a Red Sox pitcher had that many losses this early in the season. He's the first guy before the All-Star break in 1972, I believe, and the first guy before July 1st in 1932. That was Danny McSpadden, who I believe had a 1-10 record by June 2nd of that year. Of course, the Red Sox were 7-34 at the time. He ended up being traded. Porcello, with his 4-10 record, for a better team. It speaks both to that he hasn't pitched nearly up to the level he did last year, but also the lack of run support he's had, as evidenced last night. You know, 6 innings and 4 runs is certainly not what you're looking for from your starter anytime he goes out there. But, last year, Porcello, when he did have those outings where he wasn't quite his sharpest, it was, in game the Red Sox might win 9-4 anyway. He hasn't been that fortunate this time.
No, but at least he's getting in 6 innings. He's got a pretty impressive streak going there.
Yeah, it's the 14 consecutive of at least 6 innings. I believe it's 34 of the last 35 dating back to last season. He had the one against Tampa this year where he only went, I think, 4 1/3. You can throw the playoff start in there, too, if you want, where he didn't go 6. But, that's one of the things where – that's one of the bright spots. You say, okay, he isn't pitching to the level they want, but at least he's not crushing your bullpen with those starts. But even on his bad days, he's able to get you through 6 where you only need 6 or 9 outs for your bullpen.
Maybe a little help on the horizon. Eduardo Rodriguez with a rehab start tonight down at Hadlock Field in Portland for the Sea Dogs. How badly do they need him back in that rotation?
Yeah, clearly the way Rodriguez was pitching before he got hurt, he was in quite a groove. He was a guy that was probably going to garner all-star consideration, if not a berth itself, the way he had pitched through the first 2 months. The Red Sox just waiting for this rotation to be whole at any point this season. Rodriguez going out shortly after David Price came back. They've been able to fill in that spot reasonably well since, whether it were with Brian Johnson or Hector Velasquez or now Doug Fister. So you're not on pins and needles waiting for Rodriguez to come back, but certainly if he gets through that rehab start well, feels confident in his right knee, his landing knee, which is the one that he's dislocated a few times, and can feel confident going out there and pitching normally without thinking about that at all, because that was a big key to his success earlier this year, he said, was pitching healthy and knowing his knee was healthy. If he can do that tonight and carry it into a return to the rotation before the All-Star break, that could take that starting staff up to another level. Kind of what they were hoping for at the start of the season, finally in late June, early July.
He may have done it with smoke and mirrors the other day, but a pretty good first start for Doug Fister. What do they do with him when Rodriguez comes back?
Yeah, the day they signed him, Dave Dombrowski said he's a guy who we can put in the bullpen and see how that works. They've got guys down there, a guy like Blaine Boyer, who has pitched reasonably well, but Fister gives you maybe a little bit more length than Boyer, and kind of see how his stuff plays out of the bullpen. I don't know that he has much history as a reliever, but, you think back to last year, how going to the bullpen with Clay Buchholz actually helped him out quite a bit, helped the team out for a stretch there in the middle of the summer. So I think that's probably the initial move with Fister. You don't want to lose him right away, given the thought that he could be valuable that 4 years.
We're talking to Tim Britton of the Providence Journal. It seems like every Red Sox fan was paying much more attention to the minor leagues last night than the majors, because everybody and their sister was weighing in on the performance of Pablo Sandoval and Johnny Peralta, contrasted with that of Rafael Devers and Michael Chavis last night.
Yeah, that was quite the juxtaposition from Sandoval and Peralta combined to go 0-for-7, 3 strikeouts, the walk in Pawtucket, and then you've got Chavis and Devers combining for 3 homers. Devers with 2 of them. I think at this point, the only reason Rafael Devers is probably still in Double A is that They've got those two guys in AAA ahead of them, Sandoval and Peralta, that they kind of want to take a look at. Want to give Sandoval a chance to play on a regular basis at the AAA level as he's rehabbing from this inner ear infection, to see if that can get some sort of rhythm going there and have kind of one last go at it at the major league level. Beyond that, it doesn't seem like he has much of a chance to win his job back unless that happens for him pretty quickly. Peralta, they're just kind of taking a flyer on and seeing if he can be depth. I mean, when you're starting Devin Marrero and Su-Wei Lin there in a platoon, it's worth taking a flyer on a guy like Peralta, who, you know, was decent last year for St. Louis, but obviously was having a very difficult year this year before they released him. So I think once they kind of make a decision on those guys, Sandoval is ready to come up. They want to give Peralta a shot at the major league level. Then we'll see Devers probably make that jump up to AAA, probably around the time of the All-Star break, and start his second half maybe in Pawtucket.
So does that mean they don't take a chance around the trading deadline on a guy like a Todd Frazier, who's been hitting better lately, or even old friend Jed Lowrie?
You know, I would be surprised if they didn't go after someone outside the organization. I'm not sure there's enough time between now and July 31st for anyone who's currently in the organization to stake too so much of a claim to third base that they wouldn't look outside. You know, I'm interested in seeing what the price is like for a guy like Frazier. You mentioned that he's hit a lot better, really, since the first 6 weeks of the season. He's a guy who can probably be had for not very much. You're not going to be giving up a top-flight prospect for him the way that you might have had to do for a guy like Mike Moustakas, who might not even be available with the way the Royals have played of late. Lowrie is another guy. Oakland, clearly looking towards the future. Jed would give you a little bit more versatility defensively. He can play second, play third, play a little bit of short. But, you know, has the injury history in his past as well, and we've seen the issues they've had with whoever they put at third base this year. So I think the price for him would be reasonable as well. I think that's probably the market they're in. I don't think they're going to try to bust the bank for any big name at third base. I'm not sure that there is that big name there with the way the Royals and Blue Jays have played. Moustakas and Donaldson probably aren't going to be moved this July. So I think that's the kind of move you're looking at. And it's kind of who can we get to kind of tread water there until that point.
Hey, Tim, is there anybody more entertaining for you to talk to in this Red Sox team than Hanley Ramirez?
You know, we don't talk to Hanley all the time, but when we do, it's generally pretty memorable. You know, yesterday we're talking to him about, you know, for first coming back from the hit by pitch on Sunday, whether to be able to play today, which he is back in the lineup. And then, you know, there's been talk the last couple of days about kind of his productivity against left-handed pitchers, I should say. It was really against righties. He's been the same hitter he was last year. And this is a guy who, throughout his career, has crushed left-handed pitching. He had almost an 1,100 OPS against them last year. This year, it's about 526, I want to say. He's only 5-35 against them. So someone asked him about, you know, how do you feel against lefties? And he was kind of perplexed why that was the question. We had to actually pull up the Baseball Reference splits page, show him what he's doing against lefties. And he pointed kind of intriguingly to his strikeout-to-walk ratio. He's walked more against lefties than he struck out. He's striking out less against them than he's walking more against them than he typically does. So there is some thought that maybe this is just a small sample. It's only 35 at bats that he can recover from. But there is some concern, I think, with Ramirez based off, you know, the exit velocity is down. His shoulders are bothering him more this year than last year. This is the time of year he took off last year and had, what, the 22 home runs in the second half of the season. Given the physical ailments that he's dealing with, I don't think it's reasonable to expect that kind of production, but there should be some uptick at some point in what he can do for them offensively.
Sox and the Yankees keep bouncing back and forth in what might as well be a tie right now. Is this Yankees team, Tim, have enough to stay in there with some of the questions about their pitching staff?
Well, I think that's a team that is going to be really interesting to watch over the month of July because they certainly have the prospect pieces, most of which they acquired this time last year. If they wanted to make a move for a bigger name starting pitcher, you know, we've heard Jose Quintana's name since really last offseason. Garrett Cole in Pittsburgh is someone who might be made available for the right price. A younger guy who's controllable for a couple of years. If they want to see that kind of solidify their rotation, they've certainly played well enough to make you think they're a playoff contender. To make a move like that palatable for them in a way that maybe you wouldn't have expected if they were just a 500 team at this point. So I think that's your concern if you're the Red Sox. The Yankees have played well enough and banked enough wins to this point that they might be more aggressive at the trade deadline than they expected coming into the year. They might add pieces in July and kind of take off from there. But they're dealing with their own injury situation. It seems like every night they're getting someone else injured. So them and the Red Sox both trying to get healthy about the same time.
So much talk about the plethora of home runs in Major League Baseball. You've been down on the field. Have you picked up one of those baseballs? And if you have, is it about the size of a Titleist?
You know, obviously, we've got the at the Providence Journal office, we've got our lab where we're going through baseballs throughout baseball history, different eras, seeing what's inside, how the seams are raised on them or lowered. I think the coefficient of resistance or something like that.
Yes.
Something like that. I wrote about this last year, and I think it's interesting. You talk to guys who come up from the minor league, and they'll tell you, Travis Shaw was the guy last year, that the ball does fly differently. The major league ball flies much differently than the minor league ball. You know, the components of it are a little bit different. But he said, you know, the first couple weeks I was in the majors, I hit like three or four home runs that I thought were, you know, routine fly balls to right field. And they go out, you're like, hey, majors are pretty cool. and Shaw's continued that now in Milwaukee. But I think the ball seems to, you know, I'm not a scientist, but the evidence that others have pointed to suggests the ball is a little bit different than it had been in years past, starting about the All-Star break in 2015. And that's why that explains not all, but part of why we're seeing more home runs for 29 teams in baseball, but not really the Red Sox.
I can actually picture you back there in the lab a little bit like Bill Nye checking this all out.
Right, yeah. I like to think of more like a Christian Bale Batman kind of thing, but you can go with Bill Nye. That's fine.
And certainly you and not Brian McPherson back there.
Right, yeah. I've got more of the science fan, which I don't know if that says much.
Tim Britton of the Providence Journal. Tim, always great talking with you. Thanks for visiting with us. Enjoy the game tonight, and we'll check in again soon.
Oh, anytime. Thank you.